Migraines. If you don't get them yourself, chances are you know someone who does. It's the third most prevalent disease in the world, affecting around 1 in 7 people. And not only does it hurt, not only can it cause disability and, nausea and anxiety and all of that, it also puts a serious financial strain on our economy, and it's known for being an area of research that is underfunded. But the world's largest ever study of migraine patients, co-led by Queensland University of Technology, has found new genetic information linked to the headache's onset. And this may foster a greater understanding of the disease, making it an easier pathway towards a future treatment. One of the study's lead researchers is Associate Professor Dale Nyholt. Dale, good morning. Welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you.
This is a huge study. The 60,000 migraine patients, I think it's the largest study in the world on this, found 44 independent DNA variants associated with migraine risk. Tell us about this study, how you conducted it, and what was this breakthrough?
Sure. So we've known for a number of decades that genetics definitely play a part in migraine. So if you look in the general population, there's a lot of variation, who got migraine, who hasn't. About 50% of that variation is due to genes. And so me and a number of my international collaborators have been looking for a number of years. And so we pulled all our resources together and compared essentially 8 million DNA variants across these 60,000 migraine patients and went to see if there was any more frequent variants in the cases compared to 316,000 controls. And so, as you just mentioned, we found 44 of these DNA variants strongly associated with migraine risk.
And what does that tell us? What does that mean?
Okay, it tells us a few things. First of all, whereabouts those variants lie. They lie in and near genes, and of those genes, it was very interesting to see that 9 of those have been previously associated with cardiovascular traits, and a further 4 of them are actually associated with arterial wall functioning. And so what that sort of gives us great insight into what's happening at the biological level, and it's essentially pointing towards vascular dysfunction as being one of the primary mechanisms.
So vascular dysfunction, not caused by the migraine in the first place, but actually causing the migraine. Is that a switch in thinking?
Yeah, it is. So traditionally, there was a prominent theory, it used to be the vascular theory many decades ago, and where it was believed that you had this initial constriction of artery walls in the brain, and that could cause people's visual disturbances. And then once that constriction was over, you'd get this sudden dilation, and that stretching of the vessel walls in the brain would cause the headache pain.
Mm.
More recent research indicated, well, the blood flow changes actually don't correspond to the headache pain, and so there was this switch away from the vascular theory to more of a neuronal theory, where there were sort of neurotransmitters and things like that happening in the brain that were being triggered externally, and then that would have this cascade of events that would cause the migraine pain. And what our research shows is that, well, no, maybe we're wrong on both fronts, and vascular dysfunction is actually one of those primary mechanisms, and we're just basically, that's one of the key things about migraine, is that we know very little about it.
And I want to come to why we don't know much about it, but vascular dysfunction, if that is a key determinant, what can we do about that? Does that change how we look at finding treatments for them? Can we treat that more easily and more directly?
Well, hopefully, yes. So one of the great hopes is that there's already a lot of pharmaceuticals that are out there on the market that have been developed for other disorders, and many of those disorders
are the vascular disorders.
Exactly, yes. Many of those disorders are vascular disorders. So there's great hope that when we can narrow down these actual pathways that are being perturbed in the migraine headache, that maybe we can repurpose a lot of these pharmaceuticals that already exist, and they might be useful for treating migraine.
And if there are already existing treatments for vascular dysfunction, then that might mean this is a quick breakthrough for people, because it's very hard to get an effective treatment for migraine, isn't it?
It is. So one of the most effective treatments for migraines are the triptans, a class of drug, but they're really only effective in about 50% of individuals, and that level of effectiveness it varies greatly. So there's at least 50% of the population out there that suffer these debilitating headaches, and there's no medication for them.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Our guest is Associate Professor Dale Nyholt from the Institute of Health and Biomedical Innovation at the Queensland University of Technology, one of the co-authors of this research project, huge research project into migraines. You said earlier, Dale, that genetics play a part in 50% of migraine sufferers. What about the other 50%?
Well, it's a good question, that. So there's genetics pretty much underlie most things. But what we do know is it's not just all genetics. There's also environmental aspects to it. And that could just be stress factors. That could be various things in the diet. There could be a number of different factors. In fact, many people report certain environmental things that occur in frequency with their migraine headaches.
Does that mean, though, that those, say, stress or environmental factors are triggering this vascular response, that there's a vascular weakness there yet, or you're saying it's not there in those people?
Well, I think that's the $64 million question. So general belief is that you have this genetic threshold, and so you've got this susceptibility there, but then it's not enough, that you actually need some external environmental thing. And so the most common headache triggers are things like stress and negative emotions, and also sensory triggers such as flicker or glare or noise or even odours for some people, lack of sleep, hunger, and as I previously mentioned, various food, and of course menstruation in women. So three times as many women suffer migraines compared to males, and many of those women report a co-occurrence with their menstrual cycle. So there's definitely hormones play a role as well.
It's an horrendous thing. I mean, anyone who knows someone or suffers it themselves or knows someone who does, I mean, it really can ruin your life. It's the third most prevalent illness in the world. It's the third most costly, difficult to study, I understand, because the patient's basically healthy a lot of the time until they get the headache. And it's known, as you said, for being an underfunded area of research. Why? Why hasn't more research been done on this? Because it's a huge toll on people's lives and on generally economies.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that really gets most of the migraine researchers quite sort of fired up over it. And it perhaps a traditional thing that there's the broad public is quite familiar with what they think a migraine is, and maybe they think it's just a bad headache and you can take some analgesics and it will go away. But that's just simply not the case for many, many migraine sufferers. It truly is debilitating, and they can only go to a dark room and lie down, or maybe even some cases go to the hospital.
Yeah, go to hospital. Yeah. But that doesn't answer why we haven't funded it more.
Well, no, you could take a cynical point of view and say, well, people don't die from migraine, and so there's only a limited number of funding dollars there. And unfortunately, when you have the NHMRC and other bodies trying to work out what to fund, maybe it's just not being prioritised as high, whereas when you actually go and have a look at the disability due to what's happening with migraine sufferers, it's the third most debilitating disorder in the world neurologically, and it's more than 1.5 times the impact of epilepsy and multiple sclerosis combined.
So can you leave people on a positive note? If you're right, if this research is right, how quickly do you think we might have some treatment for people?
Well, it's always difficult to put a time span on this, but certainly over the next couple of years, we're going to have great leaps and bounds in what the actual biological pathways that are going on. And hopefully in a few years' time, we'll have, or even more, less than that, we'll have some repurposing of some of these existing pharmaceuticals that are already approved for use.
And your research project, have you got global partners in this?
Yes, it's a huge international collaboration across 12 different countries of Europe, the USA, and Australia, of course. And we've been working on this. There's called the International Headache Genetics Consortium, and we've been tirelessly working away at this, as you mentioned, grossly underfunded, but still kicking goals.
And that's an interesting question too. Is it a developed world disease, or is it as prevalent in the developing countries?
It's difficult to really answer that, but I work for the World Health Organization. When they do have a look at Africa and a number of these other countries and Asian countries, remarkably, they do normally find a great consensus in the prevalence of migraine headache, with it affecting approximately 12 to 14% of the population at any point in time. And the lifetime prevalence is actually about double that.
Okay. And just very briefly too, and I notice a new treatment that's come onto this scene is the whole Botox thing, which seems to be an answer for a lot of things lately. Is there any research suggesting that's working?
It does work for some migraine sufferers, in particular the chronic migraine sufferers. So these are the people that have migraine more often than not. So 4 days of the week or more, these people are having these debilitating migraine headaches. And they've found that Botox injections at certain parts into the forehead can relieve their migraine headaches.
All right, Dale, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Dale Nyholt is the lead researcher in this global study. He's associate professor at the Queensland University of Technology.